Here we are in the room of the hotel in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm sitting here with the one, the only, the world traveler. He is known in Zimbabwe as the Great White One.
In Zimbabwe and also in Rhodesia. Well, Rhodesia doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't?
It doesn't, no. I think it's called Zimbabwe now.
Oh, well.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Max.
Mr. McGrew, how are you? Everything good?
It's very good. It's very good. I'm sitting here with Max Docelli.
I'm getting ready for the bankruptcy of Greece, which will happen, what, on Monday?
On Monday. No money left.
Gus, bring more Coke, Bus. Gus, hamburger. What?
Hamburger.
Yeah. So, remember that old Saturday Night Live bit? Cheeseburger.
No Coke. Pepsi.
I used to live in Jersey. There was a diner right near the train station in Southern New Jersey that was exactly like that.
Really?
Cheeseburger, what do you want? No Coke, Pepsi, what do you want? Hurry up, finish. We need more customer room. They would just push you out, you know?
Was the food good enough to be rude? Because it has to balance out,
the food
out,
was
right?
Really good there. They made great breakfasts. People eat breakfast all day long there. That's what they make, really good breakfast. They have these real nice hams. Anyway, it's called the Summit Diner. I don't know if it's still there anymore.
Now, what is the place? I remember hearing years ago about a place in New York that is really dirty. Like dust hangs from the roof, but it's supposed to be a really good restaurant. It's been there forever.
You're talking about the Second Avenue Deli?
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
I don't know. I just remember hearing somebody told me about this place in New York that was over by, maybe it used to be a fire station or something. I can't remember. But they said it was so dust just hangs like stalactites. But the food is so good.
You want to hear a great story about restaurants in New York?
Yes.
I started in comedy in 1980 at Pips in Brooklyn. Which was when he, are we allowed to swear on this thing? Okay. There was a club called Pips in Brooklyn. You've heard of it, right?
Yes.
It's kind of a famous club. And the second time I ever went on stage, ever, the first time it was a Catch Rising Star, and Belzer was the MC.
That's how long ago.
Yeah, and that's how, you know, in 1980, and Belzer says, hey, babe, you're on next. When you're number five, so he goes, 5 minutes, you're up. I'll bring you up in 5 minutes. 35 minutes later, he brings me up because he goes up there. Anyway, I go to Pips the next night because somebody said you can go there and get on stage. And I'm waiting to go on, and some guy was sitting there with his girlfriend. This is in Brooklyn with all the chains around his neck, really Guido guy, you know?
Yeah, and in 80. Ooh,
and his girlfriend had hair up to there. And he looks at me and goes, hey, you on next? I go, yeah, I'm going to. He goes, you better be fucking funny or you're dead. He said, okay. Anyway, I'll tell you a funny restaurant story. Back in the 80s, a group of comics, we used to go to the Green Kitchen, which is the, you've seen the TV show Seinfeld?
Uh-huh.
You know the diner they go to?
Right.
Well, that's kind of
based on
the Green Kitchen, was right down the street from Catch a Rising Star. Comics would go there every night, or not every night, but a lot of the nights. And we'd get there about 2 or 3, and we'd stay there all night and talk and write. But some nights we would go down to Chinatown to a place called the Wohop, which was a 24-hour Chinese restaurant on Mott Street. And it was the only place open at the time, but it stayed open 24 hours. And sometimes there'd be like 5 of us, sometimes 10, sometimes 15. And there was one waiter, the overnight waiter, who fucking hated us. As soon as we walk in, he go, oh, you guys, I hate you. Oh, you fucking guys, you guys. Shut. And then the reason he hated us, first of all, we'd always ask for separate checks. Because it'd like be 5, 10, 15 comics.
Right.
We'd ask for separate checks.
Always cheap bastards.
Yeah, and we would sit there, you know, 2-3 hours at these 2-3 tables put together.
Yeah.
And take up, you know, all that space. And the other reason he hated us, because one of us would always order something called Muhu Yuhu.
What is that?
Muhu Yuhu. No, we made it up. But we would fuck with the guy. And as soon as we walk in, he goes, you guys, the order Muhu Yuhu, the no Muhu Yuhu, the order Muhu Yuhu. Okay, you understand? Okay, we sit down. Somebody would say, I'd like to have the Muhu Yuhu. Ah, you fucking guys, you shut up. He would just drive us crazy. He would drive them crazy. One night we went there, it was about maybe about 10 of us. And I don't remember the guys. Ronnie Shakes was one. You know, maybe Seinfeld might have been one of the guys. I don't remember because he came with us
that
a lot.
Time, that time of your career.
He would hang out with us all the time, you know. But anyway, we were sitting there we walk in, and usually the guys at the door were greeting us. Nobody else was there but us.
Yeah.
Or a couple of old Chinese people. But And he wasn't there. The guy wasn't there to yell at us. And
we felt bad.
Yeah, we felt bad. So first of all, and then we went down, we sat at the table, and the guy didn't come out. And we're yelling, hello, anybody here? And out of nowhere, about 5 minutes later, this guy came running out of the kitchen with a big plate of muhu gai pan. He literally threw it on the table. Everything went flying. Opened up a can of yuhu, poured it on top. And he said, muhu yuhu, now you pay. You pay. And we paid for it. And I think he overcharged us. And we never ordered it again.
What does muhu yuhu cost?
It doesn't. I think he charged us like $20 for the shit. You know, I don't remember. But he charged us for it. Muhu yuhu.
Now, when you started...
The reason we did, yeah, go ahead.
Who did you start with? Who was your main, like, when I started, it was like Hicks, Kennison, Jimmy Pineapple.
Jimmy Pineapple, there's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Jack Mayberry, that was the group.
Down at the Comedy Workshop in Houston.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I went down to the Comedy Workshop, Sam was, I already knew Sam because he was staying with me in New York.
Yeah.
He told me to look up a kid named Bill Hicks, and I saw him, and I thought he was really funny. But he reminded me a lot of Sam.
Really?
And believe me, Hicks was funny. But you know who impressed me more than anybody? That
who's that?
Ron Schock.
Ron Schock?
Yeah. Ron Schock really impressed me. I liked his stuff. A lot of people don't
storytelling.
Like,
it was more of a storytelling.
He only had like 4 bits, but they lasted 20 minutes each.
Yeah.
What a funny guy he was.
Yeah. Well, who were your guys when you were in New
when
York?
When I first started at Catch Rising Star... This is how it's. I was in a theater that did some off Broadway work, and I wanted to. One night I was in a show with that. Remember Divine?
Oh yeah,
the big
transvestite.
Yeah, I was in a show off Broadway show with him, and one night he took the cast to the comic strip in New York City, up on 80 something Street and Second Avenue, and I'd never been to a comedy show ever in my life. And I walk in, and I remember the comics. Larry Miller, Jerry Seinfeld. We were only there for 3 comics, then we left.
Right.
You know? And a comedian who really impressed me was Uncle Dirty. You've ever heard of Uncle Dirty?
I've never heard of Uncle Dirty.
Robert Altman. He went back in the 60s and 70s, he toured with the Grateful Dead. He used to work at the Fillmore East as one of the opening acts. He was really fun. Real hippie. Type George Carlin and him used to work together at the Cafe Wa, and Dirty. Remember when Carlin first started doing comedy?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Do you remember what he looked like?
Oh, he was in a suit.
Suit.
Yeah.
Tie. Very straight.
Very straightforward. Yeah.
Uncle Dirty showed me a letter, and I kid you not, he showed me this letter because he lives in Long Branch, right? He retired, New Jersey, Long Branch in New Jersey. He showed me a letter that Dirty sent him and said, "Look, I took your attitude and I ran with it and became famous." And that's what Dirty used to do back then. And Carlin picked up on that. You see, everybody's got a connection, you know?
Somehow, some way, somebody's influenced you that worked for me. Or.
Yeah. We went to see the comedy show that night, and I looked at the comics and I thought, wow, I can pick up more chicks doing that.
Than on stage?
Than on stage.
Especially working with Divine.
That was my first thought. But I wanted to try it. I said, I really want to try it. I really want to try it. So I called around and I asked some friends from New York. And I said, what's the best club to start at? And they all told me Catch Rising Star in First Avenue. So I walked into Catch Rising Star on Monday night, which was audition. I called them up and said, when is open mic night?
Yeah.
And they told me Monday night. So I went in not knowing anything about the procedure.
Right. And signing up.
You have to sign up. Yeah. Well, evidently... You have to. Well, I walk in, and first thing I saw the name Rick Newman. So I walked up to the bartender and said, "Can you tell me where Rick Newman is?" And he pointed me to this guy over there. So I walked over to Rick Newman. I said, "Hi, Mr. Newman. My name is Max Dolcelli. I want to audition. I've got 5 minutes together. Can I go on tonight?" He goes, "Hey," he starts laughing at me. He goes, "Don't you know what you have to do?" I said, "Yeah, go on stage." He goes, "No, you've got to get here. Sunday night around 4 in the morning and wait in front of the club and the first 20 comics get a number. And if you're after 20, then you don't get a number. So you usually have to get here early." I said, "Oh, I didn't know that." Yeah. I said, "Okay, so what night do I Yeah, do I do this? He goes, next Sunday. He goes, but you know what, kid? I like it. He calls the bartender. He goes, Peter, give this guy number 5 for next week. Which was a great thing at the time, but the other comics freaking hated me.
Right.
And one of the comics was Bill Maher. He was one of the open micers that night. You know, and
he's done okay for himself, hasn't
Bill's
he?
Bill's doing okay, yeah. I'm not sure whether he's conservative or liberal. I'm not sure.
I don't
sure
know which way he leans.
Yeah.
I feel that way about that kid on The Daily Show, too. I'm not sure
which way they lean. They know exactly what they're doing, though, because they know not to lean
too far
one way or the other.
Right. I don't feel like they're really liberal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, I started to Catch a Rising Star, you know, and the guys that were there were Belzer. A comedian named Kelly Rogers was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Overton.
Rick I always loved.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I thought he was going to become famous. I thought he was going to be a major star.
Well, Rick does a lot of work. He does a lot of movies.
A lot of TV shows. Yeah.
A lot of. Rick and I are friends on Facebook.
Oh, he's wonderful. So am I.
Yeah.
Yeah, we every so often he'll like something that I put up. Not often, but every time.
Or he will challenge something I've put up.
Isn't it great when a guy like Rick Overton presses like on one of your things? Wow, I'm somebody.
Yeah. The other one that does that to me, too, is Greg Travis. Remember Greg?
Yeah.
Greg was, you know, in Showgirls and some other stuff. But the one day, we're like, because I've known him for years, but then one day he started liking stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. It's kind of nice when you pull the comics out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Start following you or talking to you or...
So the next week I went on, and David Say used to work there a lot. Remember David Say? Very funny. He's one of the best. And a lot of these guys that I thought were going to become stars from back then, because I'm watching these guys, and some guys are better than others. Joe Bolster. And I thought, wow, these guys are going to be great. They're funny as hell.
Yeah.
Never made it.
Yeah, what happened to Joe Bolster? He definitely was one of the guys I thought was funny years ago.
He was brilliant. Brilliant. In fact, if you watch Seinfeld and if you watch, you know, those guys, and Paul Reiser, they're Joe Bolster's delivery. That's Joe Bolster's delivery. That's Joe Bolster. That's not a Seinfeld delivery. That's a Joe Bolster delivery. A lot of people don't know that.
And then Paul went on to make it bigger, right? Paul Reiser did
Paul Reiser did great before Seinfeld, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell is he doing now.
He's back on the road. Paul's back doing clubs again.
It's amazing, these guys. You'd think they'd save it for us, those freaking mamelukes.
Yeah, you would think they made enough millions off their TV show that they wouldn't have to come take the weekly stand-up spots from us.
Unbelievable.
You know?
If they're listening, anyway.
We're trying to make a living and pay our bills.
That's all I want to do is pay my bills. And child support and whatever. Anyway.
Speaking of which, you've been married before, right?
A couple times, three, four. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
The last time
I got married, I stood there and I said, for now. Anyway, what?
I think marriage licenses should come in invisible ink.
I think marriage licenses...
disappearing ink.
They should have expiration dates.
Oh, yeah. You should have to renew them.
And you know what? I'm all for same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I am all for it.
Not gay sex.
Doesn't have to be gay. You can be same-sex.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because that way you can marry another straight dude who has good insurance, and you just bring chicks home for each other.
Yeah.
Be great. Perfect.
I don't know if I told you or not, but a lawyer friend of mine that I was talking to since this law has passed has told me that that's how this is going to be abused. That older straight men whose, like, wives have died or whatever... will become great roommates.
Perfect.
And they can get married and they get the benefits of insurance and Medicaid, whatever you need as a couple.
Then the gay community will be screaming, wait a minute.
That's ours?
This ours. Hello. Anyway, also, I'm really happy for it because now they can enjoy the benefits of divorce like the rest of us.
Right. Which, you know, because I
used to... The pleasures of divorce.
Well, I used to say all the time, and it probably will happen to them now, but you never heard about a gay couple breaking up and losing everything.
No.
You know what I mean? You never heard those stories ever before. Even for straight couples that were living together, you heard about horror stories.
Yeah.
You never, ever heard about a gay couple like, then he left me, and I lost everything, and I'm living on the floor.
The curtains, oh my goodness. You know what? I'm really... Honestly, truthfully... I'm glad they're able to do what they want. I'm really glad that there's equality and freedom for all, because I'm all for equality for everyone.
Right. And this is what you and I have talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Is we both are for equality.
That's all I want, equality.
And that's all I've ever wanted.
I want everyone to be equal.
But when you say that...
Isn't that communism? Anyway, go ahead.
But when you say equality, people assume, and like you really are pushing for equality.
Yes.
That's like, what, so you're not for this race? No, I'm for equality.
I want everyone...
I don't want extra for anybody.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That's not fair. Well, it's not fair is you wanting more than equality. That's what's not fair.
Because
I really do believe everybody, I'm talking about everybody, should be just equal. We both take the same test. Did you pass it? No. Then you didn't. See what I'm saying?
That's like
when they started doing the thing for women firefighters,
mm-hmm.
and they lowered the standards. Like they don't have to carry as much weight or carry it as far.
Yeah.
Well, then we're not equal. You're going by a different standard.
Right.
And that's what I've always pushed for is I believe in equality. Just let's have it a standard and we have to stick to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want everyone, and it's not fair when anybody of any group is not treated like everyone else.
Yeah.
Everyone should be treated equally.
Yeah.
Okay. So when that's out of the way.
Yeah, so we solved that world problem.
Yeah. Mr. Obama, did you hear us? Hello?
So you're totally okay with the equal marriage, okay?
I'm fine with it. I'm good with it, you know? And like I said, they're going to enjoy the repercussions of divorce like the rest of us. And boy, they might want to change it back the other way after that.
Now, do you feel like this week we had that and the Confederate flag thing,
right?
That's got to come down, you know. And I'm again, I'm one of those like, all right, I don't have a big problem with that.
What difference? I mean,
you know, maybe off the Capitol building, but if he wants to fly it at his own house, what is that? And then that's like, no, you can't fly it
on
property. Well,
what's why are they against the Confederate flag? Why? Because it represents what?
Because it represents the South and the Civil War.
But the South was, they broke off. They wanted to become their own country.
Yeah.
The United States wanted to become their own country from England.
Yeah. And that's why it was the Confederate States of America that they were trying to
move over. I understand. I'm not for anybody. But all I know is...
what bugs me was they're trying to rid the history of the South. Like, you know, get rid of the statues. Get the flags down. The mayor of Memphis is talking about digging up the graves of...
Of what? Confederate soldiers?
Yeah. And moving them.
To what?
To a place that's not prominent in the city. I mean, it's like all of a sudden this ignorance is run wild of like, you can't eradicate
the history. You can't change history.
But it looks like they're trying to wipe out.
Why don't we just tear down the Colosseum in Rome because they used to kill Christians there?
Yeah, that offends me, so tear it down.
Yeah. Oh, come on, it's the same thing.
Yeah. But that, what do you think of that type
Christians
of ignorance
were slaves.
Running through America right now with that whole thing of political correctness gone too far?
It's so vulgar that it's almost, I can't believe that somebody in office hasn't stood up and said, come on, enough is enough. Let's fix it. Let's you know, stop it. Just stop it. Let's go back to living life.
But how would you do that? How would you just tell people, all right, you can no longer be politically correct? Doesn't that sound like, oh, that's kind of hate speech? That's kind of, what are you saying there? We can't, you know, what are you saying?
How can we do that?
Would that have to be a law?
Oh, God, no, not another law.
Would have to
law.
Go to Congress and go, we've got to do away with political correctness? We have to say people need to start using terms that are offensive?
I have no idea. That would be fun, though. I remember when we first started doing comedy, you can get away with a Polish joke.
Yeah.
You can get away with, you know, just, it wasn't offensive. People laughed.
Right. The Polish people laughed at their own jokes.
Yeah. Two Jews walk into a bar.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, Czech and Green used to do jokes like that.
Who told those jokes? Jewish guys.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness. It's getting, Seinfeld did that whole thing, you know, but that whole political correctness, he can't work colleges anymore. And I understand it.
Because
I see it at the clubs.
Yeah.
I see it in college. I can't work colleges anymore.
Well, Amy Schumer today, you know, the Amy Schumer, who's got the Amy Schumer show on Comedy Central, she put a thing out today, I saw, is that she was not going to be politically correct, put down your torches. because they're coming after her now for her TV
good
show.
Good for Amy. Good for her.
She goes, this is what I do. This is what I'm good at.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to change.
Lisa Lampanelli would be crucified. Oh. My goodness. And I like Lisa. I like her. And I told her to stick to her guns. Stick to what you do. Don't listen to these people telling you can't do that. You can do it because one day you're going to get a following.
Yeah.
And she got a following. She's doing great.
Well, what? I have not seen Lisa in a while.
Yeah.
I had worked with her a few times, and she was always great, always edgy, kind of the female Don Rickles.
She says the N-word.
But I have heard just recently, now that she's gotten married, that her act has changed. She doesn't seem to be as rough. Is that true?
This is like her third or fourth marriage. She's been married a couple of times. And you want to hear me from Boris Bazaar? Everyone that's even married or gone out with her died.
What?
Yeah, they pass away for somehow or another.
Like a Black Widow kind of
thing? Yeah, exactly. And she's a wonderful lady. She's a wonderful lady. I don't think she had anything to do with it, do you think?
I don't think so. I would hope not. But she used to talk all the time about how, I love me some black dick.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and got away with it.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know if you can, but that was like 5 years ago when it wasn't so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still do it now?
I don't know. It really has gotten crazier this year. Like, it's been around forever, political correctness.
It's really
but it's
sad.
All of a sudden it blew up this year. I don't know if it's the internet or Twitter or Facebook.
Facebook has just become a hate place.
It's hate.
It's become a hate place to where I'm almost don't want to go on it anymore.
Yeah, I've said it on my podcast here several times that I'm about ready to get off Facebook. I mean, I say it, but I never do because I need it.
Kill time at the airport.
Yeah, but what you don't need is the stress that it causes you of looking on and seeing your own friends being like ignorant.
Yeah.
You're like, how can I be friends with this person if they really are this
right
dumb about us?
The country has become so divided. And black, white, and I grew up black. My father was black.
We talked about this earlier.
I was born in Italy. I was born in Italy in 1953. And my father died when I was five in 1958. My sister and I were put in an orphanage. While we were in the orphanage, my mother, who had a sister that lived in America already, arranged a marriage. My stepfather, who had no idea, and I'd never seen a black person in my life living where I lived, came to Italy and I met my stepfather, and he was black. And I was a little taken aback by it because I didn't know. I'm six years old. But he was a wonderful man. I love him so much. He brought us to America. We called him Papa Jimmy. And in 1959, we came to America. And I lived in a neighborhood where it was all black or African American, but they're called black, you know. And I was the only white kid, my sister, you know, but in the neighborhood. And white kids wouldn't play with me. The black kids would play with me. And in a way, were sort of like their little punching bag in a way, because that was their release. You know, this is their chance to, you know, but we became friends. So some of them were really close to me.
Right.
And the white kids wouldn't play with me. In fact, I had my eighth birthday party. Being white, I wanted to be part of the white scene.
Right.
So I invited all the kids from my, you know, back then. Remember when you sent out birthday invitations back then? You handed them out at
school? Oh, yeah, the schools and stuff.
Nobody did RSVP.
Yeah.
You know, nobody called. They showed up. I handed out all the invitations to the white kids because I wanted them to come to my party. Nobody showed up. Not a one.
Oh, that's like a bad afternoon special.
I know, my God. I still have a feeling. I almost feel like crying right now. And my mother was tactful, and all the neighborhood kids came to my party. But it's just, you know, I experienced racism back then because my father was black. Whenever we went out as a family, people would literally
stare
or right in our face, you know. Can I say the N-word?
Oh, yeah.
They would say, nigger lover, right to our face. Right to our face. You know?
How did your dad deal with it?
Well, you see, my Papa Jimmy was born in, you know, 1912. So he came from old school.
Yeah.
Where you didn't deal with it. You just walked away from it. It was different. It was different. You know, he would sometimes say something, but most of the times he knew because people beat you up or hurt you back then.
Yeah.
You know, or the police would arrest you, you know? If you were black, you just, you know, the little things, you know?
But, you know, like you and I were talking earlier this week, though, as bad as that sounds back then,
mm-hmm.
when we went through, like you were saying, the 60s and the 70s, it completely disappeared.
It got so much better.
You know what I mean? Because we, like you were talking, we both had black friends. We both, because of the music, we all loved Motown. We all came together on the music.
Oh, I love you. Know, Otis Redding.
Otis Redding. We all agreed. We'd hang out in the same clubs.
Right.
You know, I never felt there was any different. And now I feel like things have changed back for the worse.
It's really sad. I don't know what's causing this. I don't know what's causing it. Political correctness or something. But, you know...
Is it entitled?
I judge people for what they are.
Me too.
Not for what's inside, not by what's
it's not
what
outside.
They look like.
It's not outside at all. You know? I always say I judge people by the way they handle a four-way stop. That's my criteria.
Okay, you're next.
Yeah. Yeah. Because some of my and I will sounds horrible, but some of the sweetest people in my life have been black people.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that some of my best friends when I was a little kid, because I grew up in a mostly black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Loved those people. Their parents were so sweet to me. Yeah. You know, so it's not, I don't understand.
Their parents were really nice. I'm telling you, all my friends in my neighborhood, the parents were nice. Kids, we'd go to the playground every day and play all day long. And, you know, and I didn't, and after a while, I didn't see
color.
Color at all.
You know, that's
just, my cousins were black.
Bobby's mom. You know?
Yeah. But I'll tell you how it was. I used to be in a Cub Scouts. They put me in a white den. I was in a Cub Scouts. I'm like 8, 9, whatever it was. And I used to walk 8 blocks to the den, across the tracks to the other side of town where the rich people lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to this den meeting every Tuesday, and I'd walk to it. Then I'd walk home, and I loved it. And it felt good. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, but these people had a house with more than one bathroom, you know, and the woman baked cookies, you know, and it was
what
really
wrong
kind of,
with these
it
people?
Felt nice.
Yeah.
And one Tuesday, it was really raining very hard, and the woman, my dead mother, called all the parents up to pick up the kids. And so I didn't know this, and I'm ready to leave. She goes, oh, no, your father's coming to pick you up. I said, okay, I'm waiting there. I wasn't thinking about it. Papa Jimmy comes to pick me up, and a lady opens the door, and she says, can I help you, sir? He goes, I'm here to pick up my boy. She goes, you probably have the wrong house. Oh, no, that's my son over there, Massimo, my Italian name. And I left, and the next week I was transferred to a black den. Yeah.
Really?
That kind of shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's racism.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? It was directed to my father, but it was also directed towards me.
Right. Well, how far did you, when it comes to Scouts, how far did you go in Scouts?
Oh, I was a Boy Scout too, man.
Did you do Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Weeblos?
No, I never went to Blue Weeblos. I had Boy Scouts, but then I discovered girls. Anyway.
Then you discovered...
girls.
Girl Scout cookies.
Girl Scout cookies, right.
Did you?
No, I don't know. I quit the Boy Scouts. It just, I went to Boy Scout camp. I liked it a lot. But I just, after a while, I just became, you know what it was? I started working. I was young, and there was a lot of anger in my house.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be out of the house a lot.
Now, you have boys of your own now.
5.
Were they in Scouts?
None of my son Sam was in the Cub Scouts for a little while, but kids don't do Boy Scouts.
That's kind of what I was leaning toward.
They just don't do it anymore.
Is because this podcast is called Remasculate. You know, it's
bringing
back manhood.
Yeah.
Don't you think little boys ought to be going to Scouts?
But and I used to walk to the Scout meetings myself, and back then, but people don't let their kids do that anymore. People don't give their kids independence because they're afraid. Somebody's going to get them. You know something, Steve? Those creeps and perverts and morons, they were out there back when we were growing
right.
up.
Right. And
they were there.
Yeah, and our parents told us how to deal with it.
And in fact, they were out there more then than there are now. And I've encountered that stuff. I just
I did too. I don't think I've ever told it on here, but I was in a mall and I had a perv. I was probably 13 or 14 at the time. Perv touched me in a mall. I was just standing there, like reading a book, you know, and this guy, I felt a hand on my crotch. And I turned and I punched the guy. I broke his nose.
Good for you.
I broke his
nose. Good for you. You should go to jail.
Well, blood went everywhere. It was all over everything. We had to go to mall security. Got down. My parents came because I was not with my parents. And they decided to let me go because he was not going to press charges.
Isn't that
what,
pathetic?
What I did was worse than what he did because I physically assaulted. You know, it was an assault. Mm-hmm. I know it's out there, I dealt with it. I was told as a kid, punch, scream, do whatever. You know.
You know, Steve, it happened to me. I don't want to talk about it on the radio or a podcast, but let me tell you something. I had problems with that kind of stuff when I was about 10 years old, and no one can keep a secret like a child, because I was so devastated and ashamed of and destroyed my life for the few years, and I never told a soul till I was in my late 30s. And you know what? I'm glad I got it out eventually, but they were out there. You know, and I learned after that to stay away from creep. If anybody even
give you a vibe,
I would run away. You know, literally. And they were there. They were out there. People say it's worse now. It's never been worse than it's always been there.
It's always been there. But I don't understand what makes parents more afraid than just teach your kid. You have to teach your kid. You don't put them in the house. You don't. I had an argument with a girl I used to work with, woman I used to work with, who wouldn't let her kids play in the front yard. They had to be in the back, in the fenced area. Well, why can't they be in the front yard? Somebody might steal them. Well, you're supposed to teach them. Is that all? You're just going to cage them like animals?
When they grow up and they go out, you know that whole bullying thing? I had a big argument with Jack Maryberry about this. He goes, I said, you know what? I was bullied when I was a kid.
I was too. It made me who I am.
And it makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Nowadays they protect all these kids. Nobody gets bullied. Yeah. Nobody gets pushed around. Nobody. When you go into the world.
Real world.
You're going to get bullied.
Yeah.
And you're going to be so weak.
And it's not even bullying. Because I think they've bastardized the, whatever the word I'm looking for, the term bully. Because you're just being mean to somebody. That was bullying.
Exactly.
Bullying to me was somebody punching you, or pulling your pants down, or that kind of stuff.
That's what it was.
They're mean. These people are just mean.
Yeah, well, they consider that bullying right now. That was nothing when I was growing up.
No, me either.
That was every day.
Get punched in the
back
of the head.
It's like the sun came up.
Yeah, just be standing there, get punched in the back of the head, the guy's laughing as they walk away.
Yeah, that's what I've been called, faggot. Yeah. Come on. And I wasn't even...
I got that a lot because I was always a small, wiry...
Yeah.
I was in the art club. I always had long... As a matter of fact, I had a fight when I was a kid because I had long hair. A redneck kid, because I grew up in a farming area, wanted to fight me because he kept calling me a homo with the hair. And once we had a fight, we became friends.
Yes. I have been in fights I've been in when I was a kid.
I got into
more fights.
But I think once you have a fight, if somebody stands up to them, you're like, oh, I guess you're not so bad after all.
Absolutely.
You're not so bad.
And, you know, that's why I always wanted to become a doctor. Because I wanted to go back to my high school reunion and walk up to the bullies and say, excuse me, now it's Dr. Faggot, okay?
Dr. Faggot sounds like a new kind of soda pop. Yeah.
Okay, look, I'm not trying to be derogatory. I know it's a very bad term to
use. Oh, you use that word.
You know, but that's, you know, again, when we were growing up, that word was thrown out, and not only towards kids that were homosexual, but towards us,
queer
kids.
Queer was the big word.
Yeah, queer was another one.
Queer was the big one when I was a kid.
It was just thrown.
Don't be some queer.
Yeah.
Quit acting queer.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're so queer.
We were called that. You know, that's just what. So I don't know if you're called that. Are you okay to talk about it?
I guess so. Well, you know, at the time, though, queer in the dictionary, queer, odd, different. That's what the words mean. That's where they come from.
Well, back then, gay meant happy.
Happy. And so words just evolve exactly. And go along. And, you know, sometimes, like, stop acting queer just meant different. Stop acting different.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as derogatory, I think. Yeah. I don't know, because I'm not.
So what did faggot mean in the dictionary? I don't know.
Well, I always thought faggot was... I always thought it was so weird.
Max Dolcelli.
We'll get in trouble for this, I'm sure. Somebody will copy and paste it for the internet. But I always just thought that... Because was cigarette. Was British for cigarette.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what they call
it.
That's what
I thought. Like a cigarette. And then I thought maybe they called it faggot because it was smoking. Like you always heard dick smoker.
It could... I don't know. I don't know
where. So I don't know what that...
It's a horrible...
I'm not trying to be derogative.
Look, I never use the term. I never do. I swear to you, I'm respectful to everyone out there. It's just that when we were growing up, things were different. Yeah. That's what we're talking about.
Things were different.
And anyone that's listening to this, when they were growing up, they should understand.
Yeah.
Anybody that's under the age of 30 right now will probably listen to this and go, oh my goodness, oh my God.
But I think there's a difference.
Because they don't know.
I've never said it on here before. But I think there's a big difference between just being gay and a creepy gay guy.
A creepy gay guy.
There's a creepy gay guy. You get a weird vibe. Like some of my best friends, as you know, in the arts, we have a lot. There's a lot of gay people in arts. I get along a lot better with somebody that I know is gay, openly gay, flame on, you know.
In fact, I love hanging out with them.
I love hanging out. But every once in a while, you get around a gay guy that just gives you the creepiest, like, yeah, I'm gay. Right.
Really?
You know what I mean?
I never hang out with guys like that.
Well, you don't hang out with them. But that's what I'm saying. There's a couple times on the ships, you work with a few guys that just give you this
weird... I love working cruise ships. They are the most wonderful thing. And I tell you what, anybody that never has been on a cruise should go on a cruise because it's just so wonderful.
Oh, I think so too. I say that is the best vacation you will ever do.
Yeah, yeah.
The food is so good. Shows on the... We're bragging about the shows.
The shows are great. The
shows are great. But where else can you stay in that kind of luxury and still get to see as many places?
Yeah, in the world, yeah.
Where's been your favorite place that you've cruised to? Where would you, if somebody right now said, go, what do you recommend? Where should I go on a cruise?
I'd go to either Alaska or Europe. The Caribbean is wonderful if you go to certain islands. I like Alaska. I like Europe. South America's kind of nice. Have you ever been down to Rio?
No.
That's really nice, you know. I like... Even the Northeast, when they go up to New England, that's really nice. It's really pretty.
Alaska. Alaska's gorgeous. Going up the passageway there through the ice, gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I'll have to go with the whole European. Anything.
Europe is nice.
Anything through Italy and Greece is high on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Italy can't fight, but you know, Italia è molto bella, molto bella.
What part of Italy are you from?
La Spezia, nord Italia, vicino Genoa. Qualcuno parla italiano fuori? Ah, va bene.
Ah.
Does anybody have to speak Italian?
Ah, linguini.
Linguini.
I just have to start throwing out the words.
That's the only word you know.
Yeah, linguini.
Pizza.
Yeah, linguini.
I love Italy. I love... Bocelli. Greece is very nice. France is France.
Now you've been to Venice, right?
I've been to Venice, yeah.
Is that one of your favorite? Because it is mine.
It's beautiful.
It is mine.
Costa caro. That means it's very expensive. It's very expensive to go there. But
I wonder what it costs to live there. Have you ever looked at just real estate?
You can get really good beachfront property. Everything's underwater.
Everything's underwater. I was there one time when the city was underwater. Have you been there when that was like the water comes up and they build the high rise walkways that go down the...
No, I've never been there. No.
The tide comes in every once in a while a little too high and it floods. And they have these metal walkways that they put up like almost like like bleachers.
Yeah, I had a cousin that was a streetwalker in Venice.
Yeah.
She drowned after the second day. Woody Allen. Anyway, yeah, cruising is wonderful, and in show business, I mean, I can't imagine doing anything else but show business. Can you?
Did you always want to do this?
No. No. I never, in high school, I was so preoccupied with so many other things in my life, and in high school, never thought about being an entertainer or anything. I mean, a lot of guys were in drama class, and some really good. In fact, I know a friend of mine that became a very great actor, a theatrical actor that I went to high school with. He was in drama, you know, he did drama in all the plays.
Yeah.
And I never did that. I never was in any play in high school or junior high school. I just never even thought about it.
No, I was at a play in elementary school.
Yeah.
I was the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but it didn't give me the bug. You know, I didn't have the bug.
No.
But all through junior high and high school, I was in art, so I was always involved with the drama department. Like, I was painting sets.
Oh, I see.
Or I was painting things for the, you know, props. And so I was involved in it, but not in the acting actual part of it. You know?
Right. What I did was, I got married when I was 19, which was stupid.
Oh.
If anybody out there is thinking about getting married at 19, don't do it. Anyway, it was stupid. I mean, and then, but I fell in love. Like I said, I came from a very horrible childhood and home. My home life was falling apart. So I wanted love. So the first woman that loved me, I just thought, okay, whatever.
Let's get married.
Yeah.
Let's have a kid.
So I got married and she got pregnant right away. And we had a baby. And my son is wonderful. They're all wonderful. And, but she left me. And I was
devastated.
Remember the first one? That first one that ever hurt you?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody's ever been hurt, the first one is the worst.
The first cut is the deepest.
Is the deepest. I was devastated. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't, you know, I was so down on myself. And I had a pizzeria at the time. I used to make pizzas. Yeah, I used to own a pizzeria. And one day I was in New York City. I was walking down Bank Street in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan. I'm walking down Bank Street. I just happened to look. I mean, my head is down all the time. I just happened to look up for a second, and I saw a sign on a door of a studio, and it said, acting classes start whatever day it was.
Yeah.
And I looked at it, and I thought, acting classes? Maybe I can meet some chicks. That was my first thought. Because I wanted to meet someone, you know. I was so down on myself. And I thought maybe it'll boost my confidence. So I went up to the door and I knocked on it. And they told me how much it was cost. And I had the pizzeria.
Yeah.
So I was making decent money. Said I could afford that. So every morning I would drive into New York City. I have a pizzeria in Jersey. I would drive into New York City and take acting classes. And I found out I was pretty good at acting. I never thought I was this good at acting. And I thought, wow, this is kind of cool.
But maybe you've been acting all your life.
Yeah.
See?
Well, I did. Because, like, growing up in the neighborhood that I did, I you know, I had to either fight or sometimes talk my way out of things. And talking your way out of things was easier than fighting or running. I couldn't really outrun some of the guys in my neighborhood.
So you became a character. Maybe you just kind of became this character you lived all your life.
So I did some off-Broadway work, and then one day I had comedy, and out of nowhere I thought, let me try comedy, you know, and I loved it.
And the rest is history.
The first time I ever went on stage, do you remember the first time you went on stage?
I do.
As a stand-up?
I do.
I was at Catch Rising Star. Pat Benatar, the singer,
mm-hmm.
was the house singer. Rick Newman built a band around her. And she was at the bar, and I'm sitting there, and I'm really nervous, and I'm talking to this girl, you know. And then I didn't know she was Pat Benatar at the time. She was just the lounge.
Right.
She used to work. Rick Newman, what he would do is put on four or five comics, a singer, which is a great idea. And he had a band on stage.
Yeah.
And she was one of the house singers. And I'm talking to her, and she's giving me advice. She goes, oh, don't worry about it. I said, I'm really nervous about it. And she says, well, just go up there and be yourself and just don't think about it and everything else. And And I felt really nervous there. And then Bill Belzer said, number five, babe, you're on next. And I said, okay, I got to go. She goes, good luck. You're going to do great. So I felt a little good, you know. And I'm standing. And Belzer said, okay, I'm going to be up there for about 5 minutes and bring you right up. Okay, what's your name again? Max Dolcelli. Max is good. I said, fine. What, Max is fine. I don't care. So he goes up, and Belzer, instead of doing 5 minutes, did 25 minutes.
And kills.
Yeah, and I'm standing there shaking the whole freaking time. You know how nervous it is?
Yeah.
And I was this close to just walking out, just leaving. And all of a sudden, I hear my name. It sounded like it came from a tunnel. Max. Exactly, but in slow motion. And I'm walking onto the stage in slow motion. And the audience looked surreal, like I was in a bubble. Do you know that feeling? And I looked down, and mercifully for me, there was a woman sitting right up front. And she was wearing the ugliest dress I had ever seen in my entire life. And instead of going into my act, which is 5 minutes that I put together, I looked down and I said to her, and I don't know what compelled me to say this, but I said, you probably spent 3 or 4 hours getting ready for tonight, and that's the best you can come up with? The audience screamed, erupted with laughter, and the fog lifted.
The dome came off.
Yeah, and the audience, and I felt, whoa, and what a rush it was. Wow, they're all laughing at me. I just said something funny, and I couldn't believe it. And then I started doing my act.
How'd that go?
You know how that went.
Go back to work in the crowd. Go back to work in the crowd.
But you know what? Just that one joke, or whatever I said, Rick Newman said, come back next week. So
that was the start of it.
Yeah, and it felt good.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that ugly dress, I probably wouldn't be in the business right now. I probably would have walked out and never came back.
One of those. Well, that was one of those God gifts moments. In comedy, you get those God gifts every once in a while. Just like, oh, I couldn't have asked for this. I was doing a show, it's been years ago, in California, outside of Monterey. Mm-hmm. And there was three of us on the show, and it was basically a Hispanic club, and almost all gang.
Yeah, oh boy.
It really was. It was just like, and the first guy went up and bombed, and the second guy went up and he was bombing, and they started heckling.
No.
It started to get ugly. And he got off early. Then it was my time, and I was nervous. I really was.
Really?
I was really feeling nervous. As soon as I stepped up on stage, like you said, that moment, as soon as I stepped up, a car alarm went off. You could hear a car alarm. And this guy goes, I think that might be mine. I heard him go, I think that might be mine. And just out of my mouth goes, it's not yours. City buses don't have car alarms. Oh, they jump up. They were high-fiving each other. And that moment became, okay, you're okay.
You were saved by that.
I was saved by that. They started paying attention to the jokes, and I knew I could go in and out of the, you know, work the crowd a little bit. But God gave me that moment to save me.
You maybe never would have gotten into comedy, because if I went up there and I bombed completely, I may have never done it again. I would have probably said,
Yeah, because you watch new talent guys now, watch them bomb over and over and over.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done that.
Yeah, no.
My ego could not have put me through that. One or two, you're like, you know, maybe this isn't for me.
Well, I had the pizza joint at the time, and I was making money, so I really didn't need it, but I thought, well, I want to do it. I really want to do it.
Yeah.
And I did it, and I'm glad I did it. And,
what were some of your actual first jokes? Do you remember your actual?
I did. My first joke, this was, it's a visual. I stood up, and I go, this is my impression of a Polish guy stepping on dog shit. Then I pretend to step on something, and I look down, and I would take my foot, and I would clean it off my other pant leg like that. I'd go, ew, and I'd clean it
on your pants.
Down my pants. That was one of my first jokes.
And they asked you back.
Yeah. But it got laughs.
Oh, I know.
Because it was kind of funny.
But now try it. Try.
You can't do Polish jokes. Yeah, yeah, I know. And what was the other joke that I... Oh, gosh, I don't remember. Oh, I went out with this. I went on a blind date. This girl was so ugly. When I went to pick her up, her parents were laughing at me. Her father said, "You can have her home anytime you want." How did the joke go? We got in the car. She looked at me. She said, "Where are you going to take me tonight?" I said, "To the woods and set you free."
Oh man.
But again, you can't do those jokes nowadays.
Oh, that's so sexist. You know? That's so sexist. That's so mean.
Yeah. I brought her back home. Her parents moved away already. I left her on the front lawn. She was grazing. She looked happy.
She was grazing?
Yeah. Those were some of my first jokes. But I can't do jokes like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, one of my first jokes, what I remember doing, was making fun of the small town where I was living, Pearland, Texas, that the girls are so big. The girls were so big. When they wore Wranglers, the W on the pocket was a straight line across their ass.
I did a joke. Oh, you want to hear a funny comedy story? I was working in Charleston, South Carolina. This was back in the 80s. And I used to do the joke. Remember when MC Hammer had that, you know, "Can't Touch This"?
Oh, yeah.
Can't Touch This. So this was my joke. I'm walking on a beach. I'm walking down the beach in Fort Lauderdale. There was a woman sitting on the beach, 1,000 pounds. 1,000 pounds. Sitting on the beach, shading the whole right side, all the way down to Miami. Huge. Wearing a t-shirt that said, "You can't touch this." I walked up to her, I said, "Thank you." That was the joke. That's all the joke was. Now, I'm working in Charleston. I did that joke, and people laughed.
Uh-huh.
After the show, I'm sitting at the bar with the other comedian. This big, heavy woman walks up to me. This really happened. She says to me, she goes, "You're the comedian from..." No, this is how it started. She walks up to the other comedian. She goes, "You were very funny." She looked at me, and she goes, I said, "Well, I guess I sucked," you know? And I'm the headliner.
Yeah.
And I did great that night. And that was, I said, "I guess I sucked." That was her cue. She turns, she goes, "You should not make fun of fat people." And I looked at her and said, "What? I don't make fun of fat people. What's the matter with you?" She goes, "What do you mean you don't make fun of fat people? What about that joke about the woman sitting on a beach, blah, blah, blah?" I said, "You're kidding me, right?" She goes, "You shouldn't make fun of fat people." I said, "I was talking about 1,000, it was not even, you know, 1,000, and she gets right in my face and she puts her finger right in my face. "You still should not make fun of fat people." And that's when I snapped. I said, "First of all, lady, I was talking about 1,000-pound person. 1,000 pounds. Not even realistic. Not even in your league. What are you, 500, 600?
Oh
my God.
Oh.
She went, "Rawr! Rawr!" She started screaming, "I'm telling the manager!" Her face got like beet red. I thought she was going to charge me. And she ran over and told the manager. The manager came out. "What the fuck was that all about?" And I told him what happened. He thought it was the funniest thing he ever heard.
Oh.
I couldn't help myself. She just kept on and on. And I had to hit her. I had her hit her with something, you know. Verbally hit her, you know.
Yeah, didn't mean to hurt her.
I didn't want to hurt her feelings. I just didn't, you know, come on, get out of my face.
Well, you know, I do this, that bit, my act about pig sex. You know, pig sex.
Who's your farmer?
Who's your farmer? Well, I was at a club, Deja Vu, in Columbia, Missouri, years ago. And this guy walks by me. He walks in front of me. I was just standing at the bar, and he walks by me, and he goes... And he goes, "You're really funny, man. Pig sex." That's what he does. He goes, "You're really funny. Pig sex." And I went, and as I turned, this heavy set woman goes, "You doing that at me?" I go, "What?" She goes, "Why are you making that pig noise at me?" I go, "I'm not deaf." I was like, "Oh, could that timing of that whole thing have been worse?" You know, I was responding to somebody else. But the timing of me looking at her while I was...
I wish I was there to enjoy that.
Oh. But it kind of made me hurt.
Yeah, I wanted to go,
"It wasn't for you." She walked away all mad. I'm like, "It wasn't... Oh, you didn't see my show."
Oh, God, I got one just like that. I was working in Baltimore back in the... Remember when you couldn't smoke in bars anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in New York, you couldn't smoke in bars anymore. And I flew down to do a show in Baltimore. And in Baltimore, you still could smoke in bars at the time. And I didn't know this. So I'm upstairs eating, and then the guy says, "You're on, man." And I ran downstairs to the room, and I run. The place is packed, and I run on stage. And I walk on, and at the time I smoked. I didn't smoke that often, but I smoked. And I look into the audience, and everybody's smoking. I go, "Whoa, you can smoke in here?" And they go, "Yeah." I said, "You can't smoke in New York." He goes, "Fuck New York." I said, "Oh, great." So I take out my cigarettes, and I didn't have a lighter because they took it, you know, back then they took them at the airport.
Right.
So I asked somebody from the audience for a lighter. And the guy gives me the lighter. I light my cigarette. And instead of giving the lighter back, I did the old joke. I took the lighter, looked at it, put it in my pocket. I had a jacket, put it in my pocket. Everybody laughed.
Yeah.
So I said to the audience, "Does anybody else have a lighter?" Some other guy hands me his lighter. And I take it, and I put it in my pocket. And everybody laughed again. Not 2 seconds after that happened, this older woman and this younger woman are walking out of the bathroom. They're coming back into the showroom, and I see them walk in, and I said to the ladies, I said, "Hey, you wouldn't happen to have a lighter on you, would you?" The whole audience is like, because they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, because they're not
they're all
the joke.
Laughing really yeah. loud. This older woman stops and stares at me, and she screamed out, and I kid you not, "My husband just died of lung cancer. How dare you ask me for a lighter?"
Oh, man.
And the whole audience went, and they're all staring at me. "Okay, funny boy,
get out of this.
What are you gonna do now?" And I, Steve, the first thing that came to my mind is what I said to her, and I didn't want to say it, but I had to. I said, "Well, then you must have a couple of lighters lying around the house you can't use."
Oh, man.
The audience erupted with laughter. She made an about face and walked out. And I felt so bad. And I even told the waitress, "Can you go explain it to her, please? Because I feel bad about this." You know?
But it was a good comeback.
But I had to get the crowd back.
You had to do something, yeah, because you could have lost the whole show on something like that.
The audience, you have to get the crowd back in the expense of one person.
Right.
You know? If I did that, you know, in clubs, you can get away with that. Some venues, you can't get away with that.
Right. You know? Right. Well, man, I'm glad you decided to do the podcast here.
No. When are we going to start, man? When are we going
to
start?
I have to ask you now, as we wrap up here, how do people find you? Do you have a website?
MaxDolcelli.com, MaxDolcelli.com, or AAAComic.com, AAAComic.com.
AAAComic.com. You're on Twitter, Facebook?
No, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, but I don't twit.
You don't do it?
I don't twit.
I don't twit.
No, man.
Well, man, I appreciate you doing the podcast here with me.
And before we end, I just want everyone out there to know that, look, man, I am like, you know, I know we were talking about some heavy subjects before,
mm-hmm.
but I am like for everyone to have every right that they want. I mean, I'm all for equal rights, and I'm really, honestly, sincerely, I am glad that they passed this law for same-sex marriage. Let them get what they what
happiness.
You know, happiness.
Happiness.
You know,
that's what I want.
I want everybody
saying.
To be happy.
Let everybody be happy.
And
that's what annoys me with everybody fighting on Facebook
yeah.
about it. Just be happy.
That you know,
just
and
let it go and be happy. Everybody deserves it.
Yeah,
deserves
everybody deserves.
Happiness.
Everybody deserves equal rights, regardless of their sex, race, creed, or sexual orientation. You know.
And that's why I love you. You have
yeah.
a good heart, man.
Yeah, I am. I'm a.
You
great,
have a good heart.
I got a good heart. I get irregular heartbeats sometimes, but for the most part, not so bad.
Well, thank you, Max. Max Dolcelli, everybody. Well, I hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. I had a great time with Max. And I want to remind you, please subscribe to the podcast. Tell all your friends about the podcast. Share the podcast. Any way that you can share it, whether you click on it, a little link and do it, copy and paste the link off the web browser. Share, share, share. Mm-hmm. Let's help this thing grow. And want to remind you to check out the vlog, the Wrinkled Sheets vlog. As you guys know, the girlfriend and I do a podcast called Wrinkled Sheets, and we have started doing a vlog, a daily YouTube vlog, and you can follow us on there. Go follow that. I haven't done a Remasculate blog yet. Excuse me, I probably should, but I have not done it yet. But I do have my own YouTube channel, Steve McGrew. Check that out. Got a lot of comedy clips and stuff on it. Please share those. Go pick out your favorite comedy clip and share that. Help me go viral. You guys are my fans. You're my fanatics. You got to help me grow. You got to help me sell some more tickets at the comedy clubs. And I appreciate everything you do for me. So, all right? All right. Till next time, God bless America. And go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu. Ha ha ha!